Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And we are broadcasting from our... we're broadcasting from a studio I've never used before. And so it'll be good to get back to the real studio. Since I don't have an engineer, I'm on my own in here, and I'm just kind of learning the ropes. So, today is Monday, October 15th, and there is a lot going on. Of course, the main things we're going to talk about tonight are, well, there's some miscellaneous news I do want to cover. But also, we have a Nobel Peace Prize for Al Gore, and it's just amazing how differently the right and the left have reacted to this award. Of course, they're on two different sides of global warming, and it's an article of faith on... Each side thinks it's an article of faith for the other side, the issues about global warming. So there is no happy medium there. Then we've got torture. There's some news about torture in the last week. There's some news about Turkey and the Kurds and the way... No, the Kurds in the U.S. and the genocide motion... that the House of Representatives seems intent on going ahead with, that is going to upset Turkey. But our biggest problem with Turkey is actually what they're going to do about northern Iraq and the Kurds over there. And then we've got a whole range of issues related to foreign policy and Iraq, in particular the issue of General Sanchez and the statements he made this week and how those are being reacted to on both sides. So let me start in with some easy issues, if I can. The woman who won the Nobel Peace Prize, I'm sorry, not the Nobel Peace Prize, the Nobel Prize for Literature this week, last week, is totally unimpressed with this. And let me just... start by saying that I'm not going to be taking any calls this week. I guess there is a telephone hybrid in this new secondary studio, but I don't know how to work it for sure. And frankly, it takes time to answer the phone, and it takes time away from time talking. So I am not going to do that this evening. So Doris Lessing, who's a famous novelist and has won every other prize in the book for literature, she got home from shopping or wherever she was, and there were reporters camped on her doorstep. And so, at that point, she said, "What's going on?" And they said, "You won the Nobel Prize for Literature." And she said, "Oh, Christ, I couldn't care less. This has been going on for 30 years. I've won all the prizes in Europe, every bloody one, so I'm delighted to win them all now. It's a royal flush." And she went on to say, "I can't say I'm overwhelmed with surprise. I'm 88 years old, and they can't give the Nobel to someone who's dead, so I think they were probably thinking they better give it to me before I popped off." So I like that attitude because, you know, one of the interesting things about people that turn down prizes is it's always, you always worry about their motivations, or I do. For example, a couple of different people have turned down the best Oscar award. I believe, oh, I can't believe his name is escaping me. It may come to me. But the people who turn it down, they get the acclamation of getting the award, and then they get the additional acclamation of saying, "I'm above all this, I refuse to accept it," kind of a thing. So you can't help but win, I guess, when you turn down an award. Maybe that's the lesson there. Anyway, a couple of local stories here in the D.C. area that I think are funny. One is that George Washington University is putting a fine in place for barfing on one of their shuttle buses. It's a bus that runs all night long, and it turns out that people get on it in the middle of the night, they're too drunk, then they throw up, they get off the bus, and someone has to clean it all up. So they're now fining $200 or $300, depending on, I guess, how sick you get, to clean up your vomit if you throw up on the bus that runs between the Foggy Bottom and the Mount Vernon campuses. And what's interesting is some students are opposed to this. I don't get why you would oppose this. It seems to me anybody that barfs on the bus ought to pay. And then someone else said, well, what about barfing elsewhere on campus? Well, let's take it one step at a time. But if you barf on the bus, it strikes me you ought to be willing to pay to get it cleaned up. The other thing is they have to take the bus out of service. All the passengers that might ride it aren't going to get on and want to get on. So it's a big mess when you barf on the bus. I just thought that was a hilarious story. But not quite as funny as this story. And this reminds me of a friend of mine whose mother listens to Rush Limbaugh and right-wing talk show hosts all day long. And, of course, he's not a right-winger. He's not a left-winger by any means. He's a Republican. But he does see through Rush and the boys and some of the girls. So it turns out, this was in the Washington Post this morning, it turns out that a guy by the name of Cleve Overton in Brookland has built a studio, is using his studio, he's an artiste, to create a work of art. And what he's done is he stretched audio tape across a frame, almost like weaving the back to a chair or something, but it's huge. It's about 8 feet by 4 feet. And what he's using for his material, the tape, that is, the audio tape, is some of the 18 years of Rush Limbaugh radio show broadcasts that his mother recorded religiously, actually his mother-in-law, before she died last year. Now, I can't imagine why you'd record Rush's broadcasts and save them. I wonder if she ever went back and listened to them. But she felt it was important, apparently, to make a recording of all of Rush Limbaugh's broadcasts. And, of course, if you've ever listened to El Rushbo, and chances are, if you're smart enough to listen to my show, you don't spend a lot of time listening to Rush. But some of you know, I listen to Rush every week, some. I feel it's my duty. It's like Mother used to think it was my duty to take castor oil, you know? Although castor oil was probably good for me, and I don't know any way in which Rush is, except you like to keep up with the loonies, you know? You got to keep the loonies on the path. And one of the things that Rush Limbaugh is fond of saying when he gets to the end of an hour is, it's another hour essentially in the can, but what he says, on its way to the Broadcasting Hall of Fame or Broadcast Journalism Hall of Fame or whatever it is, he has a very high opinion of himself. I don't know if he really believes that or if it's part of the shtick. My friends all think it's all shtick. I don't think so. I think he certainly believes the ideas coming out of his mouth. Anyway, there's a gentleman who is putting those tapes to good use. And let's see, Fox News started its business channel today. It's not on in my area yet. If it is, I haven't heard that Cox Cable is carrying it. We will find out soon enough. But my guess is they'll succeed. They'll do pretty well because if they do in business what they do with news, they will lighten it up, not have too much serious news, have a lot of light stories, and have a lot of babes and a lot of cleavage, and that's a formula for success in cable news. If you haven't noticed that about Fox News, what I think is hilarious is that they're fond of talking about their ratings, and they do kick butt. That is, they beat MSNBC or CNN consistently. But flip the dial around a little bit in the evening. Well, you can do it in the middle of the day, too, but flip it around in the evening and see what's being covered. Whether it's John Gibson's show or any of the shows on Fox, it's pretty much news light. They are not covering serious issues most of the time. Now, that doesn't stop these hosts from, when they get to their commentary part, you know, jumping right in on politics or Iraq as though they have some credibility on those areas. But unlike, you know, some of the shows on CNN or MSNBC that are actually covering hard news, many of the Fox shows don't do it. The only show that does it consistently is Brit Hume's show, and even he will dabble occasionally in some lighter stuff. But that's their new show for the evening. But there are much more serious topics on CNN and on MSNBC. You flip the dial around, and CNN will be covering some aspect of the war in Iraq. MSNBC will be covering some aspect of the campaign, and Fox will be covering, you know, Britney Spears or something a little more fluff. So it shouldn't surprise us that Fox gets higher ratings. And let's see, I think I've already talked about the cab drivers in D.C., but they are rallying because they want to make sure that they get the right decision on how the fares will be computed here in D.C. So let me just, I guess I haven't talked about this in quite a while. Let me just run down this issue. In the District of Columbia, fares are computed differently than anywhere else in the country. Everybody else is on meters, and here in D.C. we have zones. And what happens is people always feel they're being ripped off, or they might be being ripped off, because the taxi cab driver doesn't give you a meter, takes you where you go, and then he tells you how much you owe him. And it's his word whether you've crossed zones or not. Now, if you know D.C., you know the zones, but it's still hard to figure it out. You get a certain amount for crossing a zone. And it's still hard to figure out, but certainly tourists have no chance of figuring it out. And so the question is, do they stick with these zones, or do they put meters in all cabs, or do they do some combination of meters and zones? I think they should go to straight meters, charge what you will. The argument is that people overpay, currently under the current system, I think it's that they overpay for long-haul taxi rides and they underpay for short-haul taxi rides. But the problem is the confusion and the feeling that you're being ripped off. And, of course, there are a percentage of taxi drivers who are unscrupulous and who will rip off people, particularly tourists. And I think we should go to meters. Now, the main argument against meters, according to the taxi drivers, is this, that you can't – I'm sorry, that if they put in meters, it will allow big companies to buy up all the cabs, because one of the things that meters allow them to do is to track – every penny and to track every fare, et cetera, et cetera. I would think with GPS, you know, global positioning, you could now track every fare. Well, I guess you wouldn't know when somebody was starting with a fare when they were just cruising to pick one up with GPS. You'd have to have the meters. But you could put something in that tell people you have to drop the, you know, turn this on when you start a fare, and I'll see what zone you take them to, et cetera. Anyway, meters are the answer in D.C. I know some of the taxi drivers think that they will lose their way of life. They could have a rule that just says, D.C. could pass a rule that says no one can own more than X number of taxi cabs, and then you'll still have independently owned taxi cabs. That's the big thing people claim about D.C. is that the independent business person can still have a business. So that means an immigrant can come over here, and a lot of our taxi cab drivers are immigrants, start a business. All they have to do is buy a car, get a taxi license, and start charging. So we'll see what happens with that, but that may not come right away. And let's see. I guess the last thing I want to talk about is, before we go on to more serious stuff, is college football. So a couple of things have happened. The first BCS rankings have come out, and if the national championship of college football were held today, it would be Ohio State versus South Florida. That's correct. You heard me correct. The University of South Florida. I believe that's in the Tampa area. That is not Florida. That is not Florida State. That is not a powerhouse. In fact, I don't believe they've ever been nationally ranked before this year. But they are 6-0, and last week, five of the top 10 teams in the country lost. And this week, did five of the top 10 lose this week or fewer? No, it was fewer than that, but several lost. Oh, I'm sorry. Over the last 3 weeks, I think it is 10 or 12 of the top 10 have lost a game. The big upset on Saturday was Kentucky. My Kentucky Wildcats, I used to teach at the University of Kentucky, and it's one of the greatest basketball universities in America. But here we are, Kentucky is a football powerhouse this year, believe it or not, and it's been a long time coming. The SEC is the toughest league, toughest conference in the country. Everyone now agrees on that, in football, that is. And Kentucky has moved back into the top 10. They were in the top 10 2 weeks ago, then they lost to they just beat LSU. They lost to South Carolina, who is ranked number 6 right now, and Kentucky's ranked number 8. So let's see. We've got LSU, South Carolina, and Kentucky, the only three SEC teams in the top 10. But Florida and Georgia. Oh, no, they beat Georgia. Or no, I'm sorry. Kentucky lost to Georgia. Anyway, Georgia and Florida are also up there. Anyway, Kentucky had an amazing victory over the number one team in the country in triple overtime on Saturday. And then we now see that the national championship picture looks like it could be a weird matchup, because South Florida, I don't think, belongs in the national championship game, but who knows? It's a crazy year in football. Anything, I suppose, is theoretically possible. Anyway, when we come back, we're going to turn our attention to the Nobel Peace Prize, as won by Al Gore, and the sour grapes that are out there from a whole bunch of other people. Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station. Yes, you could. You could buy a radio station. I wouldn't, because I've got this one, and I'm figuring out how to run it. So, let's move on to the Nobel Peace Prize, won by former Vice President Al Gore. And it's really amazing the reaction that's come about the Nobel here. So let's say a couple things about it first, right off the bat. Gore shares it with a UN panel that on climate change, right, a scientific panel that is responsible for coordinating much of the work around the globe, the scientific work on global warming. And where do we go with this? Let's see. So in the world of global warming, there are two primary views. Maybe there are three. There are people who just blindly believe in global warming and say, oh, global warming is a problem. We've been hearing about it for a long time. They went to see An Inconvenient Truth, and they know it's a huge problem, and Gore is right, and anybody else is whacked. Then there is the scientific view. The scientific community is always much more measured than that. But the evidence has been accumulating now for several decades through hundreds, even thousands now, I suppose, of refereed publications, that is, peer-reviewed studies that try and get at the trends and try and estimate what we think is happening. That's the purpose of science, and this is the kind of thing that people like Ann Coulter, who are very quick to criticize science, don't really understand about science. And science, its goal is first to describe events in the world, then to predict events, and ultimately to control events. Now, let me give you an example. In the world of weather, in the beginning, the best we could do was describe weather. Right? It's raining out, it's sunny, it's this. The humidity is at this level, whatever it is. But then we got so we could predict it. I don't know how old you are, but if you've been around more than 30 years, chances are you've noticed that we are much better at predicting the weather now than we were 30, 40, even 50 years ago. When I was young, this would be, and I was first paying attention to weather reports, let's say the 1960s, we were not very good, that is, meteorologists, science was not very good at predicting weather. We're much better now, and I don't just mean hurricanes. They can now predict the path of a hurricane, tell you when it's going to come landfall, all of that stuff. But just whether or not we're going to get rain, they're much better at predicting that now than they used to. Temperatures are much more accurate predictions than they used to be. So we've gotten much better at weather. Now, no one would dream, though, if the normal progression of science is describe, predict, control, no one pretends that we can control the weather yet. There were rainmakers that made money back in the Old West when there was a drought claiming they could make it rain, but we all know that was a hoax. And because science is where the rubber meets the road, no one pretends they have enough information that they can not just describe, not just predict, but even control the weather. It's not nice to try and fool with Mother Nature. But let's go to another, quote, science, economics. Now, economics is a social science because it's so full of numbers. A lot of people tend to think of it as a hard science, but of course it's not. It's a social science is a science that involves people and the decisions made by people. And so economics doesn't have the regularity, the predictability and the patterns we see in biology, chemistry, physics, because people make decisions. And there's so many complexities to the human brain, the human mind, and the interactions among people over time that the social sciences are much, much tougher to take a theory, develop it, and have any real good predictive ability with it. So if the goals of science, though, are describe, predict, control, when you move to something like economics, here's what you get. You can describe what's going on. You've got your inflation rate, you've got your stock market, you've got unemployment, you've got housing, you've got all these indicators that come out. And so that's the description of the economy. The prediction is another thing. There are competing theories about how things are going to perform, and there's no agreement on any one theory, although there's a couple of theories that seem to do a better job on most economic indicators than other theories do. So we've settled on a few theories that seem useful, although different ones in different situations. But unlike the physical sciences, where no one would pretend, meteorologists would not pretend to say we can control any aspect of the weather, economists get away with saying we can control the economy. And maybe not so much economists as politicians, right? Politicians are always making decisions. The Fed is always tinkering with the economy. Now, to some extent, you could argue, well, we can control the economy in some ways. But really, much of that is an illusion. The economy is going to do what it wants. I've never believed the president of the United States should get credit for the economy under his watch or get the blame for it. But we can't stop doing that. And so that's the nature of science. But let's go back to global warming. I mentioned there are three positions on global warming. There's the far left or the knee-jerk left, which says, oh, I've seen Inconvenient Truth and Al Gore is right and he should have been president. And the lunatics on the right, don't understand this. Then there's the scientists that have a more measured position in the center. And they say, no, we have evidence here. We accumulate studies. We get our peers to review the studies. We get them published once they've been edited and carefully monitored by peers to indicate that, in fact, they do adhere to particular rules, and we're not just guessing at this stuff, but they adhere to the rules of science. And there are thousands of those studies out there, and what they've done is they've built this body of knowledge, much as we've built a body of knowledge that tells us that the universe is 14 billion years old and it started with the Big Bang in physics, and much as we've built a body of knowledge around the periodic table of the elements, and much as we've built a body of knowledge in the world of biology around the various species and categories of human, of life on Earth, plant and animal life. And as we've done in geology and anthropology and all the fields of science, that we've amassed huge bodies of knowledge, we've done the same in the area of climate change. Now, predicting is always tougher. It's always easier to go back with geology and say, okay, here's what happened. We've had earthquakes for X amount of time. The Grand Canyon indicates rock strata that this and that happened, and we know there's volcanic activity. There's been volcanic activity in the Grand Canyon. You may not have known that, but you take one of the tours of the Grand Canyon and you find that out. But that most of the Grand Canyon has been formed over millions of years of erosion as the Colorado River went from 5,000 feet above sea level and cut through much of the canyon and carried the silt downstream. So we know all of that. And with global warming, the danger is that you're trying to predict where things are going, because scientists, we should care about this, right? If there's danger, we should care about it. So the third component here, we'll get back to the science of global warming in a minute, but the third component here is the component that says that there is a hoax afoot here, led by Senator Inhofe in the Senate and by Fox News on television. People like Sean Hannity, well, most of the announcers on Fox, I can't remember them all, not just the guys on the evening shows, but the daytime shows. You very rarely see anyone that's an anchor person on Fox News or even a guest that can articulate the position that the scientific evidence for global warming suggests we got a problem. They are almost always minimizing it, or maybe even taking Inhofe's position. Fox News has done a couple of hit shows. Hit pieces, complete shows that trash the science of global warming. And by that, by trash, I mean they refer to the whole body of scientists. These are thousands of scientists in the field of, you know, in relevant fields. Let's put it that way. There's three or four or five different fields of science that bear on global warming. And refer to them all as, quote, global warming alarmists. I did a show on this a year or so ago. You can find a detailed writing on my website, andyfinn.us, that describes in detail, Asram's his name, A-S-R-A-M is the host of it, David Asram, the Fox News host. And they bring on the same usual suspects, four or five or six of the same guys that have been arguing against global warming evidence for some time. And they bring them on and they stack them up against the thousands of scientists that believe it's taking place and that man is responsible for it. And they don't even stack them up equally. They give the global warming deniers the majority of the time, and they refer to the whole scientific community as global warming alarmists. I love it. Anyway, with that in mind, the third camp is the far right, I guess we have to refer to them as, if I'm going to refer to the gullible ones as the far left. And it's not just Fox News, of course, it's Rush Limbaugh, it's the holy BS, the whole group, Hannity, O'Reilly, Limbaugh, Ingram, Bortz, and Savage, the six of the top 10 radio talk show hosts in the country, are that crowd, holy BS. And they're all convinced that global warming is essentially a hoax, which suggests that more than that the scientific community is wrong, it's that they have a nefarious intent when they put forth that global warming is a problem we should deal with. So we'll come back to this in a little while, but let's take a short break. And when I come back, we'll talk about global warming. We'll talk about Al Gore's Nobel Peace Prize. And we'll talk about the reaction to it from the right, which is really an amazing level of sour grapes.